Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A very good Monday to you. Hope you had a good weekend. Nice to be with you. I am live in Southern California, as always. What's cracking? Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, then. Open phones in hour number one. I've got back-to-back interviews to start the second hour. I've got an interview in the third hour as well. So you want to jump in right now. Open phones to start hour one. Don't wait on my topics. Don't wait on my takes. If you know what you want to cover, you want to call right now. Adam Hawk is standing by. He's going to screen your phone call. He's going to ask you what you want to talk about. Make sure you have a good answer. 1-800-636-8686. Toll free in the U.S., in Canada. 1-800-636-8686. Start strong. It's going to be a big week. You can also hit me up on social at Jim Rome, Twitter, Instagram, and the like. And you can still email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. All right, so the first hour is open. Coming up in hour number two, back-to-back interviews. As I mentioned, I've got Tom Haberstroh, top of the second hour to talk some NBA. Bob Melvin, manager of the A's at 10:20 Pacific. And then at the top of hour number three, we talk more about the Browns. Offensive lineman Chris Hubbard joins me in the third hour. In ATP on a Monday as well. All right, so starting right here. Sunday, June 28th, 2020, one of the most New England Patriot days in recent memory. Because they accomplished two things that are so on brand, it's painful. First, they agreed to a deal with Cam Newton at a rock-bottom price. Then, they were hit with a penalty for cheating. Again. Patriots, gonna Patriot. We'll start with Cam Newton. And the deal that made way too much sense from the beginning not to happen. According to Ian Rappaport, the deal was for 1 year and up to $7.5 million. That's 1 year, $7.5 million for a former league MVP. Now, granted, it is a former league MVP coming off a foot injury and a bum wing and a couple of down years. However, New England paid Antonio Brown roughly $9 million to show up for a game last year and embarrass themselves in the process. So to get Cam Newton at $7.5 million, even if you don't know exactly what you're getting, that's an unbelievable deal for the Pats. And for all the talk of Newton's injuries and all the talk of the hits he's taken over his career, this is not an old man. He just turned 31, not 41. He's still 15 months older than Taysom Hill. That's it. 10 months younger than Ryan Tannehill. So if you're a Patriots fan, how much more hyped are you today knowing that you could have a healthy Cam Newton as your starting quarterback? I mean, let's be real, right? Let's be honest. You were not that pumped about going from Tom Brady to Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. I mean, you were really having to convince yourself into believing that that was going to be a good idea and that everything was going to be just fine. You had to work overtime to sell yourself on the notion that Jarrett Stidham, a fourth-round pick, who was thrown for 14 yards in his NFL career, was going to be the man. And he might be. He still could be. It's just now they've got a guy who's already been the man coming in, and he's coming in with almost no downside, almost no risk whatsoever. And he's got a giant freaking chip on his shoulder. So you've got a guy who turned in a pair of great performances against the Patriots as well. He's got a passer rating of 128.2 in those two games against Belichick. He rushed for more than 100 yards. He's undefeated against the Patriots. Now, Belichick's not dumb enough to base a contract on only two games from 3 and 7 years ago, but you know they made an impression. The only question to me about this deal is, what took so long? I mean, this has been sitting out there since March, so why didn't the Patriots jump on it then? Why didn't they move then? Obviously, they didn't have to, because nobody else made them, because the market for Cam Newton has been pretty quiet. Teams were concerned about his foot, and they couldn't get him in for a physical, so he just kept working out and posting workouts on Instagram, and then finally New England jumped in, and they made that deal. By all accounts, the plan was for Jarrett Stidham to be the starter this year. And if you went out to sign Newton to a big fat deal early in free agency, That could get in the way of figuring out exactly who or what Stidham is. But the reality of actually rolling with Stidham, especially during these challenging and bizarre times, is you're putting a ton of faith into a guy who has barely played in the NFL. Now, you've got to look at a former league MVP as your starting quarterback, and he's playing for next to nothing. I mean, it really is a ridiculous deal. Not my words, Richard Sherman's. Sherm tweeted, quote, "How many former league MVPs have had to sign for the Min? Asking for a friend. Just ridiculous. A transcendent talent, and less talented QBs are getting 15, 16 mil a year. Disgusting." End quote. He's not wrong. He's not wrong. I mean, it really is that good of a deal for the Pats, especially when you consider the fact that Newton, if he does a good job, then he leaves as a free agent after the season, the Pats still get back a compensatory third-round pick. I mean, that's like the most Belichick thing ever, right? How Belichick? The most Belichick move. So, is it going to work? Who knows? No guarantee. Just because you can easily remember so many Belichick moves that did work with high-profile guys does not mean this is a lock. It doesn't mean it's going to work. Because not all of them do work. And Belichick's never had to do this with a quarterback before. A quarterback with an extremely strong personality who now has to fit into the Patriot way. A culture which kills individuality. Now, that's not to say that Cam Newton can't do it, but it's a legitimate question. I just know this much. The Pats are infinitely more interesting now than they were about 48 hours ago. Because about 48 hours ago, they weren't interesting at all. I think they're potentially a hell of a lot better now than I thought they were 48 hours ago. Because 48 hours ago, I didn't think they were a playoff team. Now, no disrespect to Stidham, which means he's about to get disrespected. But the Pats are a better team, and they're a lot more intriguing with Newton under center than they are with Stiddy. Especially if Newton is healthy, because we know he's motivated as hell. Just look at that Insta feed. Now, health is not the only question. There's also a question of fit. And there's no guarantee that Newton and Josh McDaniels will mesh perfectly, or that Newton's way and the Patriot way is going to be a great fit. After all, this is a guy who's thrown down some pretty incredible looks in press conferences and posts on social media in his own font. Not exactly the Patriot way. Not exactly just trying to blend in or fit in. Then again, this is one of the reasons why I like this guy so much. So I would hate if we lost the hats, and I would hate if we lost that indecipherable font. The only downside here is we might lose a guy who's been quirky in pressers and keeps it interesting on social. Other than that, I don't see a downside. Like, worst case scenario, he's not healthy, he fails his physical, then you really haven't lost that much. Or maybe he comes back and he's only barely better than Stidham. Doesn't set the world on fire, but then you get rid of him and he leaves after a year. Who cares? It's worth the shot. Nothing hurt. There's almost no risk, almost no downside. But the upside, if this guy's fully healthy, if it works, then you've got an elite NFL quarterback who's 31 and is playing for the greatest head coach of all time. You've got a guy who's one of the most physically intimidating quarterbacks in NFL history. A guy who can pass over you. A guy who can run over you. And he's doing it again for next to nothing. That's the Patriots. And that is the most Patriots thing ever. Well, aside from the news that they dropped, the news that did drop on the same day they got this guy, that they got slapped for cheating. That would be the most Patriots thing ever. Signing Cam Newton for walk-around money is the second most Patriots thing ever. The most Patriots thing ever is doing it on a day where they got slapped for cheating again. And again, why they were cheating, allegedly, with the Bengals, I will never know. 1-800-636-8686. In other words, I love that move. I love that move for him. I love that move for them. The most Patriots thing ever. No, the second most Patriots thing ever. All right, so where do you come out? All of a sudden, they are really interesting once again. 1-800-636-8686. Toll free. Hit me up on Twitter, also at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Lots of other things to get to today as well, including the Jay Cutler update. Cuddy, the detective, looking out for his chickens. Had a bad weekend. My man had a bad weekend. I've got the update there. Big weekend for the UFC again. Fight night in Vegas went down, and once again, that delivered. I've got thoughts on that. Also, big golf weekend, which I will get to. One quick reminder, it is a getaway week for me. I'm in this week, then I'm off 2 weeks. So I'd love to hear from you now. 1-800-636-8686. So where does that leave the Patriots? Let's see the reaction. Going to your social, Sean Rohasek tweets, wore a Patriots-Bucks Super Bowl just for Twitter, InstaChat, and Snapface to melt down.
Instant chat, Snapface.
Well, the odds went down when Cam Newton was brought in. It's going to be interesting. Man, they're a hell of a lot more interesting now than they were a couple days ago. Hey, Romy, I'm sure Pat's fan is hoping their new quarterback performs more like Dustin Johnson at Travelers yesterday rather than the choke at the Open. Missing on a 12-foot putt for the win and then again on a four-footer. Or as I like to call it, a cow in Vegas. Signing Cam does not affect the GOAT, though. I've got the tenderoni Aaron Rodgers winning the damn MVP this year and putting up a couple of 50 burgers, a.k.a. a Wells in the 360. Thanks, Nikki. Unwore dudes that can't time getting on an escalator. Looking at you, Rit. Damn, Nikki. Dear Jim, not surprised that Fox backed out of their U.S. Open contract. Joel Klatt and Joe Buck had as much business broadcasting golf as Rit does being a male model. Drew in West L.A., man, Rit's had a big morning already. Yeah, Fox did get out of that deal, and they had a lot of years left on that deal.
Finally.
Got James Kelly running the board today. Finally. The flight deck. Check him out. Bumping his own tune.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Mealtime. It's coming. So, what's it going to be today? Gas station hot dog? Frozen microwave mini meal? Soup from an envelope? Or are you ready for something uncommonly delicious, like the famous Hook and Ladder Sub from Firehouse Subs? The Hook and Ladder is one of our most popular subs, for good reason. We start by piling your sub high with freshly sliced smoked turkey breast and Virginia honey ham. Then we top it with melted Monterey Jack. And then, oh man, it's served piping hot in a perfectly toasted roll. This is no ordinary sub. This is the melt-in-your-mouth meaty masterpiece. The Hook and Ladder from Firehouse Subs. Save time and order yours on the Firehouse Subs app or on firehousesubs.com. And we'll have it hot and ready to go at our Rapid Rescue To Go area inside Firehouse Subs. This is no ordinary sub shop. This is Firehouse Subs.
Welcome to Firehouse.
Enjoy more subs. Save more lives.
Welcome back. Right now we are joined by an NBC Sports NBA insider, host of the Haber Show podcast, creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge. He is a friend of the program. He is Tom Haberstroh. Tom, good to have you back. Tom, you and I normally talk throughout the course of the NBA season, but this has been such an unusual season. What's it been like for you, and how does it feel to know that we're now a month and a day away from games actually taking place, Tom?
Yeah, Jim, thanks for having me. It kind of feels like I'm less of an NBA reporter and more of a public health policy reporter.
Sure.
Because so much of my writing these days has been about, the health and safety protocols of the NBA and, you know, the ramifications of sending, 22 teams to one location that has been deemed a bubble. But as my reporting shows, it's not a bubble. It's more like one GM told me, said it was a mesh hat because, people are going to be coming in and out of the campus from Disney. Now, the Disney employees who are servicing and operating the campus, who are not going to be subject to the daily tests and the quarantine that NBA players and staff are subject to. So much of my life has become more about infectious diseases and covering coronavirus and the ramifications on the NBA. And I am so excited for, you know, the talk to be more basketball focused as long as it's safely. We're safely getting to that point.
Tom Haberstroh is my guest. All right, I'll go back to the COVID version of this or part of that in a minute. But in terms of the schedule, Tom, the NBA released it for 8 regular season games that are going to take place before the playoffs in Orlando. Overall, what is your impression of the schedules?
It's good. It's good to actually have a schedule. It's good that we have something to chew on for the next few weeks before the games start. The 8 seeding games is what they're calling it, seeding for the playoffs rather than calling it the regular season, because of course 8 teams are not going to be part of this. I really am just baffled the inclusion of the Phoenix Suns, who are 6 games back of the playoffs, in this group. You know, it's really hard for them to make the playoffs in general, and even the schedule, the 8 game schedule that they have, it's going to be really, really difficult, if not impossible, for them to get into the playoffs. But What I underlined from the beginning is that Zion Williamson is going to be the face of the NBA during this seeding schedule. And the NBA realizes that putting him in the first game of the resumption of the season against the Utah Jazz, Zion Williamson is apparently healthy and ready to play. And given that the New Orleans Pelicans have such a strong team and they have the easiest schedule of the 8 seeding games, I think they are going to be such an interesting story because of the fact that Zion is such a sensation, and also they're kind of like the underdog, the Cinderella team in this resumption of the season, given that they're a few games back of the playoffs. And I really think that is going to be the big story of the seeding games, or the schedule that was released, is that Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans are going to be the biggest team and biggest player, biggest name, in that regular season resumption.
No doubt. Tom Haberstroh is my guest. Tom, what about the Raptors and the Lakers as an example? They've got a tough run in those 8 games. Is that a bad thing, or might that be a good thing in terms of helping teams to ramp up?
Yeah, it remains to be seen, Jim, especially because we don't know what kind of injuries are going to be taking a toll here on the season and the roster makeup. So I would stress this also, is that we should take the schedule right now with a grain of salt in terms of strength of schedule, simply because we don't know how these bodies are going to react to 3-plus months of not having 5-on-5 basketball, which is different. And I want to stress this to the listeners out there. This is not like a lockout season where, you know, these guys were off the court for several months not playing NBA games. This is so different because they weren't allowed to even play 5-on-5. And in a lockout or a strike, they're allowed to play as much 5-on-5 as they want, as long as it's not in the NBA confines. So I think that's important to note, that just because they've been off for 3 months does not mean this is a regular off season. They've been off their feet and playing 5-on-5 basketball, which is really going to be a big question mark going forward, is what kind of injuries are we going to see from this? And I think the Raptors and the Lakers, they might take the position of, look, LeBron James, we need to save you for the playoffs. We need to save you, Kyle Lowry, for the playoffs. We might not have those guys play all 8 games. And I think that definitely makes an impact on, you know, the strength of schedule for those 8 games, for not just those teams, but every team in the NBA.
Tom Haberstroh is joining us once again. Also, Tom, you had a piece last week where you spoke to Dr. William D. Parham. First off, for those who do not know, who is he and what is his role?
Yeah, he's the mental health director for the NBA Players Union. So he is the person who's in charge of establishing, you know, mental health guidelines, services, resources for the players union, NBA players. And I talked to him about this bubble. Is, you know, these players are going to be away from their families for 7 weeks, perhaps more, away from family and friends. And what kind of impact will that have on their psyche? And he actually took a different reaction to that news. He actually thought it might be a positive thing for the players in some sense, where they'll actually be more introspective and look inside and actually think about what's important to them. And it actually will be a good time for self-reflection and almost like a meditative getaway for the players, because so much of this is going to be in isolation I think it's going to be very hard on the players. But listening to Dr. Parham talk about how your reflection in the mirror can only be – you can't look at your reflection in running water. The water has to be still in order for you to see your image is what he told me about – the benefits potentially of going into this quarantine is that players will be still and they will be able to look inside and kind of be a little bit more reflective on their lives compared to what it's been like in the NBA where they're always constantly on the move and traveling.
I think that's a great analogy. Tom Haberstroh is joining us. Of course, there is this other component, Tom, to all of this, and that's the protests against racist police brutality. A number of players have been really involved in the protests, and the issue has been raised about whether playing games is a distraction from those protests or if it's a bad look to be heading off to Disney to play basketball games and make money during that time. What's your sense as to how much the prospect of being at a resort during this time is weighing on players?
You know, I talked to Atlanta Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce on my podcast, The Haber Show, about this very subject. And he made a great point, which is, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement has definitely benefited from the fact that there are no sports right now. Is that when you're watching SportsCenter, when you're talking about sports, it's usually through the lens of what the Black Lives Matter movement and the social unrest and coronavirus because of the fact that there aren't any games. And so what Lloyd Pierce wanted to stress is the importance of, you know, devising strategies to amplify that message because a lot of these sports programs are going to be dedicated to games and actual highlights. So I think that's going to be a real interesting angle on this is how are players going to use those games? Use the platform in order to figure out a way to get that message out there in ways that will overcome the fact that a lot of sports programming is going to be dominated by, hey, points, rebounds, assists, golf leaderboards, and RBIs.
We are talking to Tom Haberstroh. We're talking about the resumption of the NBA season. Also, Tom, one of the topics that you addressed on your podcast recently is the fact that a social life, and in particular sex, is a big part of the league away from the game. Easy for people to get a laugh or a chuckle over that. But over the course of a season, bottom line this for me, how significant is the social life component of the NBA?
It's huge. It's huge. I mean, these guys are rock stars. They're 2020 rock stars. I mean, they travel into new cities. They enjoy their lives as millionaires and fame, all that comes with being an NBA player. You know, it's not just about going to the club or going to nightclubs. It's about going out to dinner with friends or with your close associates and just enjoying life as a traveler. And a lot of that takes up a lot of their focus in terms of like when you're on the road, yes, you get in your workouts, yes, you go to practice, or yes, you get to, you know, go at a shoot around and play in these games. But a lot of it is just seeing the city and enjoying the people in that city. And so it's just going to be a total culture change for them. And I think being away from family and friends for 7 weeks is going to be okay for like the first week, Jim. And then I think I worry that like in week two, week three, week four, it's going to really weigh on them. And I think that's where the protocols for the NBA needs to step up, because I think as players really get homesick or miss their family and friends, they're going to have a tendency or a temptation to leave the NBA bubble or just loosen up some of their discipline on safety protocols. And I just think they have to bake that into the protocols for the NBA, is that this, the lack of social gatherings, the lack of being able to interact with other human beings without your family there, I think it's really going to take a toll.
Tom Haberstroh joining me for a few more moments. You know, Tom, I guess time will tell, but is there a scenario in which the resumed season is suspended again or canceled? Or is your sense that the league is going to go ahead with pretty much no matter what happens?
Oh, I think, you know, on the conference call that Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, held with reporters on Friday, he said the plan is if there's one positive test, no matter if it's LeBron James, he was saying a star player or a journeyman, it doesn't matter if it's LeBron James or if it's the 12th guy on the bench. They don't plan on shutting down the league if there's one positive test. But the thing that was not in the safety protocols and the thing that everyone wants to know is, does the NBA have a level in which outbreak happens, whether it's on one team or several teams, do they have a predetermined number or predetermined scenario in which they shut everything down? And I think that's really one of the biggest questions here. And you talk about basketball leagues. The basketball tournament on ESPN, if a single player tests positive in the basketball tournament that's starting up next week, the entire team is removed from competition. They're done. So it's two drastically different approaches. The NBA is going to try to resume as much as they can, even if there's a positive test. But other leagues are simply taking a more cautious approach and saying, if there's a positive test, we need to shut the entire team down. That doesn't appear to be the case in the NBA.
We're talking to Tom Haverstraw. Tom, before you go, hit me with one more thing. You've got a piece up on NBCSports.com where you declare that you are firmly in the camp of Team Asterisk. How come? Lay it out for me.
It's tongue-in-cheek. I'm mostly satire here, Jim. I got so fed up with the idea that this championship needs to have an asterisk on it that I went back and put an asterisk on every team, every championship in NBA history. That was my take, is that it is not an asterisk this season. Every championship deserves an asterisk if you want to put one on 2020.
I agree with you 100%. He is an NBC Sports NBA insider. He is the host of the Haverstraw podcast, the creator of the AOS Pepper Challenge. Good friend of the program, too. Tom, great to have you back. Stay safe, and let's do it again soon.
You got it, Jim. Thanks.
Thank you. Well done, Tom Haverstraw. I agree. I come out very strongly with the same take. Don't hang an asterisk on this. Don't do it.
Summer's here, and it's time to enjoy the season. That means it's time to feed your yard with Scotts. It's easy to help your lawn stand up to summer's wear and tear, to keep it lush and green and help prevent those brown spots. It's time to get outside and enjoy every day. And Scotts has got you covered, because even though this summer may feel different, the best things never change. So let's get to it. It's time to enjoy your yard. Scotts. It's good out here.
Welcome back. We are efforting Bob Melvin. I'll have that for you momentarily. Big story, of course, Cam Newton signs a one-year deal with the Patriots. Love that move. I love it for them. The Hood. It's like the most Patriot move ever. Hood played that perfectly, but I like that move a lot for Cam Newton. Chris in Montana tweets, Cuddy is starting to look like a 65-year-old burned-out smoker. Hey, Chris, personal appearances still are not show fodder. But of course he is. These things are not good for your face. Namely, cigarettes and stress. We all know that. Got to moisturize, man. Got to moisturize. I mean, I'm no esthetician, but I know the two things that will kill anybody's face, cigarettes and stress. As promised, we are joined now by the manager of the Oakland A's, 10th season with the A's, three-time manager of the year, one of six managers in the history to win manager of the year in both leagues. Led Oakland to back-to-back 97-win seasons, back-to-back spots in the postseason. We are joined by manager Bob Melvin. Bob, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How about yourself?
Good, good. You know, when you and I spoke back on March 9th, we talked about spring training and the potential of your team. And then, Bob, just 2 days later, Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz tests positive for COVID. Everything began shutting down. If we were to go back, what do you remember about hearing that news and then the initial news that Major League Baseball was going to postpone opening day for 2 weeks?
Yeah, that was really the tipping point. And, you know, things happened in a big hurry after that. So, you know, we heard the news. The next day we're all at the ballpark watching it. And next thing you know, they're talking about shutting it down, and we're on our way to play a game. And next thing you know, it is shut down. So world's changed quite a bit since then. It's amazing how quickly things can turn like that. But, you know, it was a turn of events that happened very quickly.
We're talking to Bob Melvin. Bob, you also made the point that in the lead up to the announcement of the suspension of spring training, you had a feeling that it was coming. And you'd been through this as many times as you have, spring training itself. So there's a level of control that you have within it. What's it been like to have that feeling of control to lose that feeling of control and effectively be at the mercy of the virus completely?
Yeah, it's you know, there's no roadmap for that. And there's, you know, we've been through a lot. You know, I've been in the game close to 30-some years now. So Nothing like this. And once we get back starting again, it's just going to be a day-by-day proposition. If you look too far out and expect something to happen and expect something to be a certain way by a certain time, I think you're in for some surprises. So we're just going to try to take it a day at a time. We're trying to insulate as a group. We need to try to stay healthy, so does the industry itself, to get the not only started, but to try to get going and finish it. So it's going to be a daunting task, but I know our guys are excited about hopefully getting back on the field.
We're talking A's manager Bob Melvin. So you just touched on this in part, but like as you look at this thing, what are your biggest priorities when you get together with your players this week?
Well, first of all, discussing a lot of what's gone on in the world, not just the virus. You know, the social injustice and a lot of things that we need to talk about as a group. But it's getting on the field. It's trying to grasp the 108-page document that we have to try to kind of go by the letter of the law, social distancing out on the field, masks and whatever, and just trying to get a handle on that. Hopefully after a couple of days, we can get into some sort of routine with all the things that we're going to have to do that aren't natural. But, you know, the bottom line is we all want to play baseball, so we have a lot we have to do.
Bob, I'm curious, like, what types of things were going through your mind as you read through that 108-page document?
You know, I put it down after a little bit because there's just too much to try to grasp. And like I said, if we can just grasp what we need to do on a particular day and move forward from there, and then the next period of time when you know, you ramp up to, you know, inter-squad games and such, then, you know, it's a whole different set of rules that you have to grasp. To try to do it all at once, to me, just seemed a little bit too much.
A's manager Bob Melvin joins us once again. And normally you want a long spring training so you can build up the pitchers and then stretch them out. What will such a short spring training be like with them?
Well, that's going to be the most difficult part. Our guys, for the most part, have been throwing on their own. You know, we didn't have our camp open, so we didn't have some of the issues that some of the other camps did. But our guys took it on their own to social distance and try to keep themselves ready the best they can. We do have some young pitchers, and you know, obviously we're going to have to take a hard look at, you know, early on how we're going to deploy them and for how long. But you know what? We did go through, for the most part, an entire spring training. You wouldn't think it would take 6 weeks to get everybody ramped up like it does normally towards, you know, in a normal spring. So hopefully we just find a good balance.
We're talking to Bob Melvin. So there's no denying the potential of your team in terms of defense and offense and pitching. It's a team that's been growing and building for a while, and then you have this really unusual season. Like, how much do you think that 60-game season is going to impact players, and will it suit certain players better than others?
Yeah, it's a good question, and we'll see. I mean, you have to take it like your first game's an August game. And I've often said that the teams and guys play differently once there's an eye on the finish line. So, you know, in the past, your first couple months kind of take stock of your team, make some adjustments, and then if you're in it, you go after it in August and September, and that's the way it's going to be right away for us. So our guys know that. Certainly we'll reemphasize it, but losing streaks are going to be difficult during this, and you hope to get off to a good start, obviously.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, but one thing about the 60-game season, there's this argument that it might be a good thing for a team that's got younger starting pitchers because inning limits that might have been in place over 162 games wouldn't be as significant in a shorter season. What's your reaction to that argument, and when you hear it, what might that mean for A.J. Puck and Jesus Luzardo?
Yeah, no, it's actually, we probably would benefit by that. And Sean Manaea coming off an injury, too, where he only got so many innings last year as well. So we don't really have to worry about innings limits. And I think that's a good thing. So if you're all looking for silver linings, I think that is one for us.
We are talking about Melvin. So what about in a 60-game season, the stakes obviously are higher during every single game. As you mentioned, a 3-game losing streak can be really costly. How does that impact your approach as a manager during these games?
Well, you probably can't be as patient as you normally are over 162, and you may have to take some guys out of the lineup or go to the bullpen a little bit earlier or do things a little bit differently because of the enormity of every game. But it is similar to August and September, so the only thing you don't have is a lot of at-bats, which guys normally do going into those months, and guys are having good season or guys are having bad season, and you can kind of go from there. It's going to be more, you know, each and every day is going to be more paramount in trying to make the right decisions, because it's basically, you know, each game's worth three.
You know, Bob, I wonder about the intangibles. For instance, how much of success in a 60-game season is going to be about talent, and then how much is going to be about, like, team chemistry and having the right mental approach to the challenge?
Right, and staying healthy, and trying to, you know, avoid the virus and insulate as best you can. I think the teams that keep their guys on the field are going to have a better chance. And, you know, we have a pretty good group of young position players. We have our young starters here now, so that's going to be a point of emphasis for us. Is, you know, it's about staying healthy and staying safe. And, you know, the teams that can play with their best players over the course of these 60 games probably have the best chance.
We're talking to Bob Melvin for another moment or so. Before I let you go, Bob, I want to ask you about Craig Counsell, because he was recently talking about the impact you had on him as a manager. And before I get into one of the pieces of praise he had for you, you said that you knew that he was going to be a manager a long time ago. What did you see in him that made you feel that way?
Just the way he watched the game, the questions that he asks me. You know, it was a lot of the similar things that Johnny Oates told me when I was in Baltimore. You know, I'd go up and ask him a question during the game, and he'd look at me and he goes, you know, he'd say stuff like, you know what, you have a future in this. You know, you watch the game like a manager does, which a lot of catchers are programmed to do. But Counts was always one of those guys. He was got the most out of his ability. You know, he was a guy that was in the dugout when he wasn't starting and watching the game the right way, and just had it in him. You could see that as a manager early on with him.
So let me ask you this. He told the Athletic website, quote, "This job isn't to be a player's friend every day. Sometimes the player's got to be uncomfortable because that's how they get better. That's a needle you have to thread, and Bob was always able to thread that," end quote. So, like, what's your approach to threading that needle?
Well, you know what? You try to have empathy, and you try to, you know, have a good relationship with your players, but you also are going to have to make tough decisions that aren't going to be popular with them. And a lot of times what I try to say is, I go, you know, look at this situation right here. If we had X or Y hitting and not them, you know, not this particular guy that I was talking to, how would you handle this situation? And they'd say, well, you know, this is a better matchup. I go, well, sometimes that affects you. But that matchup that you're not getting, when that lefty comes in, you're going to get it later on. So we're trying to get everybody up there in the best possible situations to succeed for themselves and for the team.
So let me finally ask you this then. He calls you a mentor, but a friend first. What's it like when you have an opportunity to manage against friends? Like, is that fun, or is that kind of a tricky thing to navigate?
Depends. It can be tricky. You know, he looks like he's 15 years old over there, so sometimes he doesn't look like the manager. He looks like a player, but you can see the respect that his team has for him. So you just try to maintain and manage your game, manage your team, and kind of get a kick out of knowing that you may have had a little bit of an impact on a certain guy.
For sure. He is a three-time Manager of the Year, and once again, one of only six managers ever to win Manager of the Year in both leagues. A's manager Bob Melvin, my guest. Bob, great to have you back. Let's hope we get some baseball in soon, and always good to talk to you. Stay safe.
You got it, Jim. Hey, you're a horse guy, I hear, right?
That is true. I am.
So in my time off here, I've been volunteering over at a place called Tierra Madre, which is a horse and human sanctuary where they rescue horses here.
Yes.
And my wife and my daughter and I, Jim Gath, who runs the place, it is such a terrific place, and I've learned so much about horses and their personalities. And actually, there are a couple of horses over there that are racers, and one of them actually had some bloodlines for Secretariat and Seattle Slough. So in my time off, I've been over there quite a bit and getting the new horses, and thought you might get a little bit of a kick out of that.
Bob, I love that. Really quickly, since you brought that up, help me explain this. Like, I've tried to explain, not everybody understands horse racing. They're amazing animals with personalities and an athletic background. What's it like to be around those horses? What's that been like for you as somebody who's been around athletes your whole life?
It's incredible, and I never knew that horses had these type of personalities, and this sanctuary is for the horses to relate to people, too. I mean, they have such huge spirits, and you get to know each and every one. I think there's like 19 over there, and I change their water bowls in the morning, and some are a challenge, and other ones want to play, and other ones want to make it difficult on you, and, you know, it's just such a great place. It's called Tierra Madre in Cave Creek, Arizona, and, in a difficult time when we're waiting to play baseball, it really has been a soothing experience for me and my wife, Kelly, and my daughter, Lexi.
I absolutely love that. I'm so glad you and your family have that. That is a great story to share, Bob. Thanks for sharing that. I really think that's great.
You appreciate
that. All right, have a great day. Bob Melvin, he's so right. And this is what I've tried to explain over the years. When you say, hey, Rome, you're not going to talk about that again, are you? Yeah, great, Rome, we get it. You own a few horses. They're amazing. They're amazing. He understood that. He just said, I've never really been around horses. I had no idea that that's what their personalities were like. We are joined by a tackle for the Browns. He is entering his eighth NFL season. He signed with Cleveland in 2018. He was an all-conference player at UAB. He was undrafted in 2013. We are joined by Chris Hubbard. Chris, it is great to have you on. Before we get into everything that's happened during the offseason, Chris, how are you and everybody around you doing right now during this really unusual time?
Thank you guys for having me, I wanted to say. And during this time, man, everybody's around me. We're doing fine. Wife is good. My son is doing well. My extended family there are doing well and are staying safe. And we're just staying put and just trying to stay healthy and live day by day.
Good to hear it. And it's great to have you on. Now, you mentioned your wife. One of the things that you and your wife did was host a couples and family workout or workouts on Facebook and Instagram. So where did the idea come about, and what was that experience like?
It came about with Dr. Camille. She deals with women that, you know, that need help with endometriosis and women that struggle with having babies. So we wanted to gather a workout that helped people to come together, stuck in the house, and being able to communicate and guide people and let the people know that, you know, they're not alone, and that, you know, we've been through the same cycle as well as, like, struggling with having a child, and just, you know, just updating people and guiding them to know that here's the information for you all.
We're talking to Browns tackle Chris Hubbard. I want to talk to you about those challenges in a moment. But, like, you've been in the league since 2013. You've seen a lot of things in this league, but there has never been an offseason quite like this. So how have you personally gone about approaching it and dealing with it?
I had to step back and, like, really put some thought into this offseason, seriously, because I'm so used to going into OTAs, being able to have that and getting that fellowship with the other guys and getting that chemistry going. This year has been completely opposite of that. So we've been doing like Zoom meetings, taking those classroom Zoom meetings from to outside has completely been different from what I'm used to, but it hasn't stopped the grind. I'll tell you that, man. It's been fun. It's been a new way of trying to get better and just communicate with my other O linemen. And trying to make this offseason and make it better than what it is before.
I like that. I like that, that it hasn't stopped the grind. It's just a different way or a new way to try to improve. Now, Chris, you've long been an advocate for mental health and mental health issues in the African-American community. For a long time, people were really silent about mental health issues. Why was that something that you wanted to speak about and put yourself out there on?
Like you said, it's not talked about, and especially in my community, African-American, you know, a lot of people are scared to come out and say something because we're so stuck in the way, the same patterns of, you know, like you'll be okay, you'll be fine, and just go about your day. But in the back of your mind, you're not fine. There's something mentally that's going on with you, and you may need that help. Like for me, I took upon to get some help seeking counseling. And during that counseling, you know, I've learned some traits and things that have helped me out through my day that I may be feeling down or I may be feeling like depressed or things like that. I've found new ways and strategies to help me out. And those one of the things that I wanted to help and guide other people to be able to, you know, take with their life.
We're talking to Chris Hubbard. He's a tackle for the Browns. It's a really candid response. You know, and then on top of that, Chris, as a professional athlete and especially a pro football player, you're going to go through physical pain. Part of what's gotten you to the NFL is your ability to play through that pain and not show weakness. For a lot of players, there might be that thought that to talk about mental health would be a sign of weakness. What's your reaction when you hear that argument?
I think we have to go out and take a leap of faith. You know, we can't stay silent. You like for me, I tell some of my guys, man, if you're going through something, man, let someone know because you don't want it to get worse than what it may be. If you stay silent for so long, there's there's so much help that you can get, and you want to go ahead and attack that issue when it's stated. So, you know, that's my goal, is to help reach people and continue to let them know, man, you know, this is serious. And the more help that we can get and the more voices that we can get behind it, it'll be tremendous.
My guest is Chris Hubbard. I think the other thing, Chris, that is, I think the fans falsely just kind of assume that, man, you've got the life now. You're living the life. You're making seven figures or more. You don't have my problems. You don't probably have any problems at all. But the fact of the matter is, just having a lot of money doesn't mean that you don't have problems. Like, you've made the point that when you had established yourself in the league and you made the move from Pittsburgh to Cleveland, all of a sudden then people start coming out of the woodwork and they're looking for things and they're looking for money. What was that experience like, and what kind of an impact did that have on you?
I would say, man, it was tough, man. I had a hard time to transition, and that's when the time I reached out for counsel, like I said once before. You know, a lot of people were like, hey, cousin, I need this, I need that, and can you come out and help me with this, a car or a house, or just numerous of things, man. You're hit with all different angles, and for me, and being the person that I am, I'm such a giving person. It's hard for me to say no and see people upset, and I had to learn to say no, and I had to learn to, like, I would have to piss some people off, because in order for me and my family to stay, you know, the way we are, then we're going to have to take a stand and to say no. And that's one of the things that I had to deal with internally for myself, and just to say no.
I mean, learning to say no is always hard. Is it true? Like, I mean, the stress, did you lose 30 pounds during that time? Were you dealing with that kind of stress?
Yeah, I lost a lot of weight, man. It was tough. I was getting with my nutritionist, and telling her, like, man, I'm struggling right now. And I came into camp, my lightest, like, 285. After that, I started to pick up weight during camp, because, you know, you're all day up there working out with the team. So that was just my getaway, to get away from the stress and get away from just everyday life. You know, basically, I'm just, football is my getaway.
We're talking to Chris Hubbard. One more thought about this, and there is positive in this, to be sure, because when you ask for help and you get help, you can turn these things around. But the other thing about being a pro athlete that I think that the fans don't always remember is you're in the spotlight all the time, and it's always on you. For instance, if you have a bad play or a bad game, it's up there for everybody to see. Most of us, well, I mean, I do have a public job, but for most people, if they have a bad day at work, nobody knows. So how have you approached that kind of scrutiny, and what kind of mental health challenges come from that part of the job?
You know, I've had a couple of games where, you know, I missed a block or a couple of blocks here and there. And, you know, you see fans and here and there write you on Twitter, you suck, this and that, or you need to do better. But, you know, me and my wife, she always told me, like, it doesn't matter what nobody thinks. It just matters what Chris Hubbard thinks, like, you know, like, and ever since then, that motto stuck with me. You know, I try not to look at anything negative in my life, because if I continue to look at everything negative, then I won't get to my goals and my achievements throughout my lifetime. So being able to stay and let the people know that, hey, I learned from that mistake. And I will continue to correct that mistake, you know. So those are the things, the strategies that I've learned through this whole process.
Browns tackle Chris Hubbard is joining us. How about this, in terms of learning from the process, it can be so scary to reach out for help, but when you do and you start to do the work, how helpful is that, and what kind of a difference have you noticed in yourself?
It helps tremendously, you know. Everyday life, you know, you wake up with a new goal in mind of how you're going to attack that day. And, you know, I have different motivation quotes that I have on my phone that I look at every morning that helps me throughout the day, and that makes me even more, you know, even more hungry for what I'm about to do and what may come. So just being able to have a goal and have something to back you up behind that will help you out.
You know, Chris, in terms of the team itself, too, you told the Undefeated last year that Baker Mayfield is special. You told the story the first time you were in a huddle with him, and he said he was, quote, like, all right, mother bleepers, let's go. That's what type of player we have, end quote. Like, what was it like for you when he said that? What was the reaction in the huddle when he showed up like that?
We were all fired up, man, because we've seen, you know, that footage of him, you know, in college. So being able to see that transform into the pros, man, you like, man, okay, man, this guy here, he's ready, he's hungry. He's going to put everything out there to win. And you need a guy like that as a quarterback. You need that. And being able to block for him, that makes it even more fun. You know, I wouldn't want to block for anybody else. You know, that he does a great job of, you know, putting things together. And I've seen a lot of that, like, throughout this whole offseason right now. He's been joining in meetings and, you know, just commenting on a lot of things that he said that we could do better. So he's a pro, man. That's what you want in the league.
Chris, let me ask you one more thing about him. Like, I love the guy personally. I really do. And I'm still all in on him. He had a tough year. He had a challenging year. You know, it's one thing to be all those things, to have that kind of swagger when things are going well. You never know how somebody's going to respond to the adversity. How do you think he bounces back from the year he had last year?
I think he's going to come back even better, man. I see it. I see it in his training that I've been watching. He's going to have a heck of a year, man. I think so. And you'll see. When we get back on the front lines, you'll see what's going to happen.
I think so. So there are some really high expectations for the team. Last season, it didn't work out quite as well as you had hoped, obviously, but the team's had a huge offseason. What kind of expectations do you have for the team this year?
Man, my expectations are to take it one game at a time. We can never look forward, man. We always have to look at one game, that one game only. You know, that's how the week is. Week in and week out, you have to face so many teams, but you got to keep that bullseye on one team each week. And for us, that's the goal, man, to be able to make plays and not think negative along the way.
So, Chris, finally, let me circle back and wrap it up with this. If somebody's listening right now and they feel like they need help, but they have not spoken up before because they've been afraid, what advice would you give them?
Seek help, man. You know, being able to be in the position that I'm in right now, I want to be able to help a lot of people and to let them know that they're not alone. And if you can, like, log on to NAMI.org to seek help, because they do a great job of, you know, putting the people in the right direction. And I want to say that, you know, if you need help, if you need advice, you can contact me on my Instagram, chub74, or my Twitter, chub_hubbard74. I'll be willing to, you know, help out and talk to anybody that needs help.
And that's great of you. Chris Hubbard, my guest, offensive tackle with the Browns, entering his eighth NFL season, signed with them in 2018. My man, I think the fam needs you. You better get back to your fam now. I can hear him.
Oh, yeah, that's my son. He's supposed to be taking a nap, but He wants to play right now. So
that's good, man. I get it. All right, Chris, great talking to you. Thanks so much. Really appreciate that.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great day. That was helpful. Chris Hubbard, very candid conversation again. I like that. I appreciate that. That's good stuff. And he also gave you his information. He said, reach out to me if you want some help. If you want somebody to talk to, I'm here.
Good night,